From Illinois Soul, this is Dialogue. I'm Kennedy Vincent. Dialogue is an exchange about culture, straight from the soul. You can catch us on Saturday mornings at 11 and Tuesdays at 7 p.m. on Illinois Soul. On today's dialogue, we're reflecting on the summer season in Champaign and local community efforts that have been serving the area throughout our hot Midwest summer nights. All summer long, folks have been getting together, dancing, singing, and connecting at one of the city of Champaign's most adventurous undertakings, The Beat. The Beat on Market Street is a recurring weekend concert series. It was the brainchild of the mayor and the city of Champaign. After violence grew in the community in 2023, the city of Champaign wanted to do something about it, creating a safe space and a new nightlife outlet. As they spearheaded the vision, they brought on local voices for the community. Today, we're starting off the conversation speaking with Mayor Deborah Finan and Dante Scott, The Beat's entertainment manager. Later on, the dialogue team went out to The Beat and we spoke to a few locals enjoying their night. Thank you both so much for joining me today. Can you introduce yourselves to our listeners?
I'm Deb Finan. I'm the mayor of the city of Champaign. I've been mayor for about 9 years.
I'm Dante Scott, aka DJ Slim, owner of Slim Entertainment.
Mayor Finan, what is The Beat and why did you feel there was a need for these spaces to be created?
You should be asking Dante what The Beat is. The Beat is for people much younger than me, but actually, you know, it's interesting. It's been a diverse age group, too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
The Beat is a downtown entertainment district that really started about this time last year. We were approached by some downtown business people that were saying, we need to do something. Right? We need to bring more people back downtown because the pandemic, their habits had changed. We also needed to provide a space for people to enjoy themselves in a safe way and, you know, really think about what kind of entertainment did people want and need. And so we had this amazing staff that really went out and started interviewing, I'll say kids because I'm 57, but, you know, interviewing people in the community who were part of what we refer to as the pop-up parties, right? They were finding spaces wherever they could to listen to music, to hang with their friends, to just be together. And it was causing some safety issues throughout the community. But most of the people who were participating were just looking for a chance to be with their friends and to find a space where they could listen to music and be together. And so that was really the driving factor. And then our staff really spent all last winter planning and working on it.
Dante, you joined the team and partnered with the city of Champaign on this project. You've also lived in the area for a long time. What did it mean for you to join this initiative and provide entertainment for the Champaign-Urbana locals?
For me, it's exciting and historic because I've pretty much been here all my life. So raised in Champaign, and I've never seen anything like this space or anything like the idea of having something like this, you know, since I've been here. You know, it's more so of a thing that you see when you go to bigger cities where there's a lot more people. And so it was exciting to be a part of it and honorary as well. And I'm always like a servant of my community. So listening to the community for a long time and hearing that this is something that they needed and, you know, being able to team up with the city to make it happen, I think it's great.
So what does The Beat mean to you?
The Beat is a place where you can come and dance with strangers. You can see folks that you've never seen before, folks that you haven't seen in a while, or folks that you hang out with all the time. I've seen so many new faces, so many familiar faces. It's a place where you can come and enjoy yourself and feel safe in these crazy times right now. I think that's very important. And it's also providing a space for just a demographic in general that's not really represented a lot around Champaign or even just in general. So for so long, there hasn't been spaces, you know, for certain music genres, for certain ages, for certain race demographics. And so being able to be in this space and be be inclusive of everyone and make people feel like, you know, this is my city and I love being here. I think it's something that small cities around the Midwest will replicate, and folks will come from miles to see the Beat.
And they are.
Yeah.
I mean, we're getting people from all over.
Yeah, yeah. I talk to people from Kentucky, Indiana, especially the surrounding cities. You know, I have people calling like, we heard about the Beat all the way over in Peoria. And our bands are coming in from these surrounding towns. They're having a great time. They're loving it. They go back and they share it with other people. They're wearing our shirts. And so
was the city expecting this type of growth?
I think we were hopeful. I think for as long as I can remember, and I'm a native dude, there has been this undertone of discussion of we're missing this middle age group. We don't provide anything for them to do. How do we encourage businesses or others to provide a place for them to be, right? I mean, we talk about a safe space, and that's important. But even before gun violence was, you know, the top of everybody's minds every day, there was this underlying piece of we are losing people in our community to other cities as they, you know, graduate, because what is there for them to do here? And we were losing great talent and amazing people. And so there were a lot of side discussions, but never any big solutions. And I'm not saying that the Beat is going to fix everything in the city of Champaign, but it's going to sound silly, but you almost get emotional when you're out there, if you're a part of it, because even for the people who are participating, because it is what our community is, but you never see it all in one space together, right? So it is incredibly diverse. It's diverse culturally and racially, but also age, right? Yep. So you're seeing 19-year-olds, but you're also seeing the 50-year-olds, and everybody is just having a great time, and Dante, you know, orchestrating it all. But it's been really fun to watch it happen. And we went from, I think, like 500 or 600 wristbands maybe that first night, and I think we've topped out at about 1,800 wristbands. And so it is getting well known, and people are following it on social media, and they want to know what's going on, and we're learning. It's a pilot project, so every weekend is a little bit different as we tweak it, but it's been really fun.
I love that the Beat has this summer essence. When I went, it felt like a nostalgic block party.
Yeah.
Everyone was just enjoying the energy. Dante, what was your goal going into this? What was the goal to create a space for the people as you picked different acts and DJs and entertainment?
I think it's two sides. So there's a space for the community and for the party goers, for the people that are looking to be entertained, but it's also a space and an opportunity for local talent. And I mean, just talent in general. We brought a band just this past weekend all the way from North Carolina. They drove 14 hours to come and perform in Champaign. And they said that it was one of the best experiences that they've had. And for our local artists, it's so much deeply rooted talent in Champaign, from art to music to literature. So just being able to have a space where artists, bands, instrumentalists, musicians can come and express their talents, express their musicianship, and get themselves out there. A lot of the local businesses in the area, a lot of these people that we're bringing onto the Beat stage, they don't normally get booked in the downtown area. So now they're starting to get booked in the downtown area. Our DJs, they're starting to get booked in the downtown area. They're starting to drop the notion or the narrative that it might be bad to have a DJ. It might be bad to have hip hop, you know. And so this is shaping what that could look like.
I want to speak to the entertainment grant piece too. So the Beat downtown is really the entertainment district, and the Market Street stage is really what we've been talking about. So the Beat is a little bit wider. And part of what the city's been doing is we have some entertainment grants for our local businesses downtown to try to encourage music throughout our downtown and on different days. So it's not always just the Friday, Saturday, but if you want to have something early because Market Street's not starting till 9 or 10 o'clock at night, there's an entertainment entertainment grant that helps you provide music. And then that's exactly what Dante is talking about, is suddenly there's this recognition that there's going to be 1,800 people downtown that want to hear a different kind of music than maybe traditionally was played. And, you know, those are customers with dollars to spend that are going to help your business. And it really is. We were already this community, but I think it wasn't part of our downtown scene, and it's becoming part of our downtown scene.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about the long-term goal of the entertainment district?
So we're a pilot project. So, at the end of the summer, probably late fall, early winter, staff will come back and kind of evaluate what went on, what we could do better if we do go forward with it. I think one of the really important metrics we'll be looking at is, did it have an impact on the businesses? So, it's always been this twofold project of providing a space and place for people, but also we're trying to lift up our local businesses. So that means if you're out at the Beat, buy a hamburger before you come, or, have a glass of wine or a beer or whatever it may be, and then head over, because we really do want it to have an impact on them. And we'll be able to tell that from our food and beverage tax revenues. And we're going to need that increased revenue to be able to pay for it in the future, because we're not charging for it, at least not yet. And, if we did charge, it would be a small cover charge to just try to recoup costs. But we've got to be able to figure out ways to afford it. I think next year it will naturally change a little bit, because we've got the Plaza project downtown as well. So we're going to have a stage at either end of downtown, assuming Market Street stage stays, or the Market Street area stage will sort of shift to that stage at the Plaza. So it's going to be a transition year either way. I'm hopeful that we'll end up going forward with it. It's just been such a fun summer, but I think it's going to require way more staff than what we have, because I think everybody is exhausted, because we've got the entire city organization running an entertainment district. That's not their primary goal. And then we also, I think, are going to need some increased policing, whether that's security or that's additional police officers. I think that's a question for the chief. But we've seen some weekends where, we have adequate staffing, because we do need increased officers downtown. We just have more people down there. And I think their goal is to keep everyone safe, not to harass people. But if there's a major call because something else happens, they leave the area, and then we're left without. And so we're gonna need some increased staffing to be able to continue to run it.
Why was it important for the city of Champaign to bring other community partners on board for this project?
Oh, I think that's kind of been the model for us lately. Really, since the pandemic, that's been how we've been operating. We recognize that there's some things we're really good at, but one of the things we're really good at is figuring out who the right partners are in the community and working with them. And also, we talked, Dante talked about lifting others up, right? So we want to build capacity in the community so that it isn't always government that's coming in to do it. And so we partner so that we can help build that capacity.
Dante, as a partner on this project, what is the importance of bringing other community voices and advocates in on this?
When I'm out at the Beat on Market Street, or just anywhere downtown while the festival district is going on, I see a sense of ownership from the partygoers, from the people, the community, from the artists. They're owning it. They know it's theirs. So the community partnership piece, I myself, like I said earlier, am a liaison, a voice, for the community, So when I'm out, I'm listening to what people are saying. I'm listening to opinions, and, community partners are connected to the community. The community should have a voice that should tell you what they want. And we go back and we figure out how we take all of those things that they want and create the vibe that they're looking for.
Aside from entertainment manager and booking artists, you're also the MC. So how do you talk to the people? How do you get them comfortable within the Beat on Market Street space?
I try to send good vibes. again, I encourage dancing with strangers, you know, trying to create a vibe where people are welcome, where people feel welcome, excited. I love high energy, so I try to keep it high energy. And I also try to message to the crowd, you know, when you leave here, go home, don't go to your cars and parking lot pimp or do a pop-up party or whatever it is. But also, you know, I'm reminding them that this is your space, you know, so this is your house. So treat it like your mom is there because she might be. Yeah. Just like music.
Up next on Dialogue, we're continuing our conversation with the mayor of Champaign and Slim Entertainment. One of the goals when creating The Beat on Market Street was to help the city of Champaign reduce violence. Shootings have been down 50% this year. And as the concert series ends, city officials are hopeful for next year and their efforts to build a community entertainment district. Stay with us on Dialogue after this short break. From Illinois Soul, this is Dialogue. I'm Kennedy Vincent. Dialogue is an exchange about culture, straight from the soul. You can catch us on Saturday mornings at 11 and Tuesdays at 7 p.m. on Illinois Soul. Today, we're continuing our conversation with the mayor of Champaign, Mayor Deborah Finan, and The Beat on Market Street's entertainment manager, Dante Scott from Slim Entertainment. City officials believe that The Beat, a new weekend outdoor concert series, has been a success, especially in driving sorely needed traffic to downtown businesses. The Beat started in May of 2024 as a pilot program, and September 7th is the last time you'll see The Beat on Market Street this year. Mayor Finan, I want to talk to you about safety for a minute, because the goal is to create a safe and comfortable environment for everyone attending, but we can't address that if we don't address the recent shootings and problems that we've been seeing happen in the community, and not just in downtown, but in Champaign-Urbana. What have you and the Champaign Police Department been working on to be proactive against any type of violence in this space?
I think our space has been a safe zone. We have security. We have first followers as well who have been out there, which has been fantastic. You know, you're wanded. Your bag is checked. You know, I'm not going to say it's perfect because nothing is perfect. I also think Dante's messaging makes a difference because people are respectful. I mean, you get the occasional bar fight kind of thing, but I think it, for the most part, people are just joyful to be out there, and they recognize that if it becomes an unsafe space, the city can't sponsor it. You know, I mean, this isn't a private entity. This is the city of Champaign. And so it's got to be a respected place and a safe space. Community-wide, we have our violence prevention blueprint. City of Champaign took our ARPA funds from federal government. We put about $9 million into programs that were directed at reducing violence in our community. And whether that, I mean, some of it was policing technologies, license plate readers and cameras and things like that for our police. The rest of it was really partnerships with our community organizations, trying to get at root causes. And so how do we lift up kids and families and make sure, like, first followers, again, is there with reentry programs? And we're working on everything from donations to Unit 4 schools to help with, you know, reading and all of the rest of it, to CU Tri that's doing trauma resilience and counseling and working with victims, families. We are working really hard to reduce violence community-wide and then be able to have spaces like the Market Street stage and the entire Beat area that really celebrate who we are as a community.
And just to touch back on your community partner question, having those community partners like First Followers, CU Trauma Resilience, all of those people are also conduits for the city to be able to say, what does the community want? And also it helps for people to see those faces. It allows them to be able to say, okay, maybe I should respect this space, you know, because I see Joe Blow over here from XYZ and I don't want them to see me acting like that.
Holding each other accountable.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
Where can people learn more and follow along to stay up to date on the event and future performances?
All right. You can check us out at thebeatchampagne.com. We are on all social media platforms, I believe, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at thebeatchampagne. Make sure you go and follow the social media page because there'll be a lot of changes and updates and all of those things. You will want to stay tuned and know what's going on and look out for recap videos and all of that good stuff to be posted. You might see yourself there, and we're hopeful to be able to continue this. So,
yeah, we are hopeful. And I think figuring out how we're going to pay for it and just how we're going to iterate it to make sure that it's well-staffed is, you know, that's the piece that we'll have to work on throughout the winter months. But it's been, I think, wildly successful. And Dante, you've done a great job.
Well, thank you, Mayor.
Thank you both for this dialogue, and congratulations to everyone involved with the Beat.
As the Beat concert series ends on September 7th, 2024, the Dialogue team went out to the Beat on Market Street and interviewed some locals enjoying the live music, food, and more. My co-producer, Penny Bradford, shares more.
If you love the Beat on Market Street, make some noise.
How are you?
Oh, y'all came out. Hold on now. I said if you love the Beat on Market Street, make some noise.
I'm Penny Bradford, and I'm here at the Beat on Market Street, talking with a few fellow community members about the new addition to the entertainment district and hearing their thoughts on the city's response to recent violence in the community. Here's what they had to say.
Oh my gosh. The night at the Beat is like sleeping in your bed floating. It's like enjoying yourself. It's like in the pool swimming and you're like floating.
Fun, nice vibes, nice people, police protected.
First of all, I feel like it's cool because you get to see the community, right? I love the weather. It's like warm nights most of the time, and when you're dancing, it gets hot.
Always vibrant, you know?
It's so important to have a safe space. I feel like the Beat is a safe space.
I feel like a lot of times we get stuck with like the student life and being around students, but you could go to the Beat and you could find community members, right?
It's so important to have a positive space so we all can be safe. So many people die from the gun violence. We gotta do better. We gotta make better choices. We gotta protect ourselves. Life is too precious.
You just gotta come here with good people. If you don't come here with good people, then you ain't gonna have a good time.
Now, the Beat has carried on each week since their opening ceremony, May 31st of 2024. And some attendees said they noticed a difference in security, particularly when there's an increase in violence in the community. Although violence has never been a serious problem at the Beat, some see the added levels of security as a precautionary measure, while others feel it's sending a different message.
I have something to say. I've always felt safe in the Beat before and after, you know, the shooting. I think, you know, I get it in their perspective, like, oh, we're trying to increase safety, but I think okay, sure, like maybe do your security thing right at the entrance, but you know, I agree though that I feel like there was a younger crowd earlier on as opposed to like this older crowd. I don't mind it either way, but it does change the dynamic a bit.
But for the beat, it's different. You mean it's different. Like the vibe is different. The security is different. It's just like suddenly the threat is there, suddenly it's not. It's the same town. It's the same people.
It's important to note that for some, increased levels of security doesn't always mean ensured safety. And with recent cases of police brutality and gun violence, there is still uncertainty as to the best solution for keeping events like this safe. The success of the beat reveals Champaign's yearn for fun and safe events that inspire the entire community to come together. With the event coming to an end and students making their way back to campus, residents will have to make their final appearances by Saturday, September 7th. It's the last night of this downtown street festival, although there are still plenty of other events in downtown Champaign to catch. Experience the community, live music, and local vendors before the summer is over. From community members,
Danica Wilson.
My first name is Autumn, last name Powell.
Yo. First and last name is a lot, but I'm going to say my Instagram name for you. My Instagram name is Deja Vu.
Ariana Cano.
Diana Gula.
Our name is...
I'm K. Cole.
K. Cole.
And I'm Penny Bradford, and you're listening to Dialogue.
We got to rise up. It's going to take a community. It's going to be a community, not just one person.
You're currently listening to Dialogue on Illinois Soul. I'm Kennedy Vincent. Stay with us after this short break as we revisit a conversation from June of 2024 about Black Music Appreciation Month from professional saxophonist Dr. Reginald Lewis. From Illinois Soul, this is Dialogue. I'm Kennedy Vincent. Dialogue is an exchange about culture, straight from the soul. You can catch us on Saturday mornings at 11 and Tuesdays at 7 p.m. on Illinois Soul. You're currently listening to a dialogue segment that was recorded earlier this year in June of 2024. June is Black Music Appreciation Month. It's the annual celebration of African-American music in the United States. It was initiated as Black Music Month by President Jimmy Carter, who decreed that June would be the month of Black music. The bill was never passed until activist Deanna Williams. She played an essential role in the creation and solidification of Black Music Month. And from then on, she was known as the mother of Black Music Month. Music and song formation has been a preservation technique for African culture. And slavery is a significant part of Black music's origin and our historical evolution. Africans have maintained their stories of culture through the language of songs. Black Music Month recognizes genres like rap, jazz, soul, funk, hip-hop, and more. Today, we're speaking with Dr. Reginald Lewis. He's the current director of jazz at Illinois Wesleyan University. He's been playing the tenor saxophone since high school and realized it ran in his blood after learning to play from his legendary grandfather, Robert Bootsy Barnes, who was also an American jazz tenor saxophonist. The dialogue team sat down with Dr. Lewis to talk about his journey as a musician, the art of jazz, and he gave us a history lesson for this June's Black Music Appreciation Month.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Reginald Lewis. Thank you so much for joining us on Dialogue today.
No problem. Thanks for inviting me.
I wanted to start off with just your journey in music. How did it first get started?
In high school, I went to a performing arts high school, and I was an art major. My mom was looking for a high school for me to go to, and my grandma had like connections in the city. She was very into the arts. She was a poet, Sandra Turner Barnes. So this high school, creative arts, I never heard of it. And she said, you should go here because I could draw. She knew I could draw since I was little. And when I went to the school, my freshman year, I made a bunch of friends. But all my friends happened to be instrumental majors. So they all played instruments. And they were like skipping class to go to do performances, going out of town to do performances. And I was at home. And I wanted to go be with them. I wanted to be with them. So in the meantime, I knew that my grandfather, Robert Boosie Barnes, was a famous jazz musician, but nobody else knew. So my school does a musical every year. And this musical was Soul Brother and Sister Lou. And it was at the Walt Whitman Performing Arts Center where my grandma worked at. And the school band would play. So then I was there with this girl. I was there with this girl that I liked, and she happened to be in the band, so that's why I went to the play. But when it was over, she knew the people in the band too, and we went downstairs, and I saw my grandfather sitting there. I didn't know he was going to be there, so I went up to him, gave him a hug, was talking to him, everything and all that stuff. So then everybody in the band was like, "That's your grandpa, you know, like you don't play saxophone, blah blah blah." Like, nah, I want to go to the NBA. I thought I was going to be a basketball player, so.
We love it.
Then my band director came over and he hyped it up even more. Jamal Dickerson from Camden, New Jersey. He was like, "Man, you don't play the horn? Like, that's you know your grandpa?" He was like, "Yeah, I know." Like, because when we would go out and stuff with my grandpa, people would come up to him and say hi. You know, we'd be out of the grocery store or something, out at the park. Everybody knew him. So I called my grandpa after that, and I was like, "Hey, Papa, can you teach me how to play sax?" He was like, "Yeah, man, just call me next week." I was like, "Okay." Called him next week. He said, "Yeah, man, call me next week." And I was like, "All right, it's getting old now." So I was like, "Papa, can you teach me how to play?" He's like, "Man, call me next week." So the fourth time I called him, he said, "All right." So we met up, taught me saxophone, like how to put it together, gave me a size one reed, gave me a Yamaha that I still play to this day. I still have. I just played it this morning when I was teaching a lesson this morning. That's how I started. That's the short version. So that's how I started. And since then, I just kept going.
How does it feel knowing that this runs in your family and then being able to have your journey kind of coincide with your grandfather as well?
It's crazy because, you know, well, actually he passed away when COVID first happened. So doing it, it's kind of difficult because he didn't get to see where I got to, but he knew what I wanted to do. You know, before he passed away, he knew, like I said, he knew what I wanted to do. And it's like, you know, you're up there watching, but physically not here, him or my grandmother. My grandmother died 2 years after him. So they were the two main reasons why, you know, why I'm doing what I'm doing. But also to run into the same people that my grandfather played with and stuff. So like I met Bobby Watson. I got to play at a jam session with him in Chicago. So it was a picture of my grandfather and Bobby Watson together when they were younger. And then I took the same exact picture in the same way with Bobby Watson. So just to see that, you know, to play on a bandstand with some of my grandfather's band members and still have connections with them is real cool.
And the legacy lives on with you.
Yeah.
Right now, you're listening to Robert Bootsie Barnes. This is Reginald Lewis's grandpa. You're listening to the song called "You Leave Me Breathless." This was Robert Bootsie Barnes Quartet with the Bootsie Barnes on saxophone. Let's talk about your own music. Where do you personally draw inspiration from?
From things that happen in my life, from sounds that I may hear experiences that I've been through and the sounds that I like. That's where I get my inspiration from.
June is Black Music Appreciation Month. I want to ask you, how does music liberate you in your artistry?
Let me feel free to do what I want to do, make the sounds I want to make. And it's just speaking. When we improvise in jazz, we're telling a story all the time. When you write a song, you're telling a story. We may not have lyrics. We can make lyrics, but even the music that doesn't have lyrics, it's still telling a story. So it's, we're putting ourselves out there for people to listen to. Our voice is being listened to through these notes and rhythms and chords.
Do you feel like jazz is appreciated in 2024?
Ha ha. I will say some appreciate it more than others. You know, when I go to perform, there are certain audience members that come to every performance and, you know, they come support everybody, every jazz event. I do believe that it's appreciated, but not as much as, you know, the popular music is what we call it. Mm-hmm. But I appreciate it.
Yeah.
A lot.
That's what matters. Do you feel like there's a newfound age of jazz coming out, though?
Oh, yeah. Music is always progressing. And I'm like an older person. I like the bebop, Charlie Parker, Dexter Graham. But the music is evolving into new people. You got new artists coming out with new music. Like my friend Arnetta Johnson, but she got this thing, Disruptive Jazz. She has an album out on Apple Music. You know, just people taking this music to greater heights and new things like this happening. Emmanuel Wilkins, another one from Philadelphia. That's all I can think of right now, off the top of my head. But yeah, the music is just, it's evolving always.
You know, we're talking about Black Music Appreciation Month, and okay. Jazz, like you said, we are the four founding, yes. We are the ones who created this and who were able to make something out of nothing, too, in a way. And then, you know, we see that it's stolen.
Yeah.
Can you give us a little bit of a history lesson of jazz and Black music in America?
Slave days. There's something called field hollers, where in jazz we have this thing called call and response, where you will say something, we'll play something, I'll play it back, or you respond to each other. So in the fields when they were working, they would have these field hollers. It was basically like songs. So like somebody would lead and say something, and then the whole group would respond back with their thing. And then that transformed into vocalists and instrumentalists going back and forth with each other. That was way back, like late 1800s, early 1900s. Then we get to like the blues and Mississippi Delta. Well, from what I study, people like Robert Johnson. I want to say Greenville, Mississippi, but like I know it's in the Mississippi Delta. And then after that, then you get into like the swing, the ragtime, then the swing bands. Then World War II happened. And all the musicians had to go into the war and fight. Then the prohibition laws in New Orleans didn't allow the sale of alcohol, which led, and then musicians couldn't play in those areas. They couldn't play. It was considered devil's music. They actually used to spell jazz with J-A-S-S. Yeah, so J would be for Jack, A-S-S. So that's what they called it. Then after that, New Orleans became a melting pot for like Creole people and African Americans came together, and was like the music was coming from all different parts of the country. Like people were coming there, so it was like a melting pot. Then from that, they spread out to different places: Chicago, New York, Philadelphia. And then, you know, after swing, then you had your bebop, which became more complex. Swing music was like a dance music. You know, people could dance to it. But then you had people come along like Thelonious Monk, Charlie Parker, and playing more complex things, which kind of washed out the older players. You know, and the older players didn't want to go into that new complex style, you know. And then you had bebop, which was like fast and, like I said, more complex. And then like a combat to that happened on the West Coast, where they had cool jazz, which was more soft, like more soft and different timbre of music. Mm-hmm. I mean, instruments. And then we had Harbop, which is like a mixture of gospel and the blues, more of a, like a shuffle feel. I want to say like Art Blakey like kind of made that shuffle famous. Art Blakey and Jazz Masters made that famous. And then, you know, you evolve from there and you get modal music and then you get free jazz. But it been through a whole little thing.
A course on its own.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's also interesting because you can look at jazz as its own living, breathing thing as well. Yeah. So to see the different forms and shapes that it's taken. And now here we are. I want to talk about your experience as a Black male jazz artist. And you're in Central Illinois, but you've also traveled to many other places. Can you talk a bit about that?
Where I'm from, everybody was Black. I'm from Camden, New Jersey. So growing up in Camden, New Jersey, all my musician friends were Black. When I went to college, I went to HBCU. So I went to Jackson State, the Jackson State University.
Let's make that clear.
So I went there. So again, I was around a lot of Black musicians. But when I got to my master's program, I went to the University of Manitoba in Canada, in Winnipeg. So that's where I first like met up with, you know, a lot of white musicians and French musicians. Like I was the minority there. So in previous two places, I was part of the main population. Being a Black musician, working with, you know, maybe like white musicians, it's a different feel that I get. You know, some, you know, feel really technical and you don't feel what they're playing. You can hear what they're playing. Like, it sounds great, but you don't really feel what they're playing. That's what I kind of notice. Now, there are some white musicians that I play with that got a feel, but it's not the same. It's not like, and that's gonna sound like, if you're just gonna sound crazy. If you say you got a friend, like all my friends play the way that they talk. Okay, if that makes sense. And if anybody's listening and you play an instrument, think about your friends, the way that they have a conversation with you, and then listen to how they play or improvise over music. And it's, I promise you, it's the same exact thing. You know, if somebody always got to give details and they need to be, or it's just as a person, if they got to be on schedule, on point, on time, blah, blah, then if they see some, you know, if they improvise, and then their solo is going to sound very, you know, detailed and planned out maybe, or patternistic or something like that. But if, you know, if you got somebody who just talk, or, you know, talk and give you a chance to respond and not just talking the whole time, then their sound will sound different.
We're speaking with Dr. Reginald Lewis, and this is one of his original songs called Blues for the Village with his group, known as the Simply This Quintet. And you can find their latest album on Apple Music. We kind of talked about this a little bit, but talking about the current music scene, and I asked you if you think jazz music is appreciated in 2024, but do you think Black music is appreciated in 2024?
Everybody love Black music. White people want to be Black. They want to sound like us. They want to dress like us. They want to wear their hair like we do. They want to, it's a culture thing, and we got, our culture is lit, you know? So, I mean, everybody appreciate like the Black American music, art culture, everybody does. That's how I feel about it. Like, yeah. I'm proud to be Black.
We've also seen a lot of sampling of old music. Like, obviously throughout the history of music, but especially now, I feel like the youth, like, oh, I love this song. This is great. And they don't know that it's a sample from whatever time period that's from. But for listeners, you know, who might not know sampling or how much it's coming into play even more nowadays, mm-hmm. can you kind of talk about that and maybe the history a little bit if you can, your knowledge?
What I know is like whoever make the beats, they'll mm-hmm. they will hear something that they like mm-hmm. and either speed it up, slow it down, take a snippet of it, put it in and like redo it over and over again. So some examples, one that I can probably relate to people that might be listening is so we have Ariana Grande. She got her song, My Seven Little Things. With tattoos who like getting in trouble. Lashes and diamonds, ATM machines. Buy myself all of my favorite things. Then John Coltrane had a famous recording of My Favorite Things. Which Ariana Grande, like, she changed the words, but it's still the same pitches and everything. And then even before that, it was in a movie. Mm. So he took it from the movie to Coltrane to Ariana Grande. There's another song, Mac Miller. He got this song called, it's called Diablo. Rap Diablo, yeah. Yeah. It's the Rap Diablo. And it takes the intro of Duke Ellington's, In a Sentimental Mood. J Dilla used some John Coltrane chord changes. Even Rain by SWV. Y'all know that one, right? If you listen to Jaco Pastorius's Portrait of Janine, they took that sample from him playing it and put that over top of SWV's. It's just, like you said, it is funny when kids be like, oh, I like this song, but I'm like, we was listening to that 13 years ago. You know, you sampled it from 13 years ago.
How do you think African Americans have maintained their stories of culture through the language of songs?
Feel like they put their heart and soul into it, put their stories, like I said before, put your story into it and let it be heard by the public.
What would be your advice to young and up-and-coming jazz artists who just want to get back to the root of things?
Do your research. Go back and listen. Ask questions. And don't give up. Just keep doing it. Like, the music, the style that I play, which is like, I can play other styles, but the style preferred is like bebop and hard bop, which isn't pop, you know, it ain't that popular unless you go into a jazz club. For you younger musicians, if you're good to the music, it'll be good to you. You can't go halfway in, and that's with anything. Just give it your full, and it'll be good to you. You'll get something in return, even if you're not looking for anything in return.
Dialogue can be found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. The Dialogue Show is produced by Nidhi Shastri, Penny Bradford, and myself, Kennedy Vincent. Our news and public affairs director is Reginald Hardwick, and production assistance by Steve Mork. Dialogue is a part of Illinois Soul and Illinois Public Media. Join us for our next dialogue every Saturday morning at 11 a.m. and Tuesday night at 7 p.m. on Illinois Soul FM 101.1 and WILL AM 580 Wednesdays at 8 p.m.